Welcome to the Progress Your Health podcast with your hosts, Dr. Robert Mackey and Dr. Valerie Davidson, a husband and wife team who specialize in bioidentical hormone replacement therapy and functional medicine. They're here to help you lose weight, balance hormones, and age gracefully. It's their mission to motivate, educate, and empower you to take your health to the next level. And now your hosts, hormone experts, Dr. Mackey and Dr. Davidson.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us for another episode of the Progress Health Podcast. I'm Dr. Mackey.
And I'm Dr. Davidson.
Well, we're back with another episode. We have a question from Janelle. We should just kind of dive right in. Why don't you go ahead and read the question?
Yeah, let's dive right into this question. So thank you, everybody, for going to the website and clicking on Ask the Doctor so that you can ask our questions, and then we can share them with everybody listening to the podcast, because if you have an issue, trust me, a whole bunch of other people have an issue. So again, this is from Janelle. Question. Since starting menopause, I've had debilitating anxiety, especially bad in the morning. By evening, it practically goes away. I'm 54 and have been on BHRT, 50-50 biased, and progesterone for 3 months. My hot flashes reduced, but the anxiety remained. Now the hot flashes are returning and the anxiety is increasing even more. It was determined to put me on biased 50-50 ratio of 0.8 milligrams per ml of biased and 175 milligrams of progesterone sustained release capsule. I know I need the estrogen to keep up the serotonins, and I've tried this method, the estrogen cream and the progesterone capsules, for 2 days and felt drugged with even more very high anxiety, if that is possible. I hope you have some ideas. It's been 3 years and my life has been radically changed because of this anxiety.
Well, anxiety certainly is part of both perimenopause, menopause. Certainly people outside of that demographic, you know, women under the age of 40, certainly women over the age of 40 are dealing with anxiety. Although this one, there's one little piece of information in there that I think is the key to the situation. What are your thoughts?
Absolutely. You and I are both saying the same thing. So she's taking a biest, which is a combination of estriol, E3, and estradiol, E2, and she's doing it at a 50-50 ratio, meaning the dose has 50% estriol, E3, and 50% estradiol, E2. So at 0.8 milligrams per ml is incredibly small. That's such a very, very small dose of estriol and estrogen or biest. So at 0.8 milligram per ml, that is 0.4 milligrams of estriol and 0.4 milligrams of estradiol. And those of you that may not, you know, understand some of these dosings, I will tell you that is like, I don't even know how to just,
you might as well just apply your lotion, your moisturizing cream. You might as well just do that because, I'm surprised it's even had any impact on her hot flashes, but
what's it originally it did. And then the hot flashes came
back,
which is
very common. And what that tells you, right? What that tells you is that the dose just needs to go up. Okay. Now from a 0.8 milligram, I mean, I don't think I've ever written a dose that low. Maybe, you know, no, I mean, maybe 1 milligram. I don't think I've ever written a dosage, you know, a milligram amount per gram, below 1 milligram. I think 1 milligram would have been the lowest. And I can't even remember the last time I've done 1 milligram. Even for, if we're applying estriol cream vaginally, we might do 2 milligrams. So honestly, this is, granted, now this, the disclaimer, this is just educational purposes. We're just trying to, you know, impart some knowledge on the population, because we see this kind of thing all the time. This is a practitioner issue. The patient is desperate for some answers, but the practitioner is not prescribing enough. Okay.
Well, you know, that is really interesting. A lot of doctors are afraid of hormones, so they want to go really low. And even pharmacists are. I had a patient of mine that had moved to another state, and so we switched her to a different compounding pharmacy in that state. And I had her on relatively what I would consider like a size small to medium, probably more like size small for a bias dose.
What was the actual dose?
It was 3.5 milligrams per gram that she did a half a gram twice a day. So, mm-hmm. So 3.5, I think I might've even raised it up to like 5. So, you know, cause we're trying to raise up her estrogen levels in her bloodstream. And she was talking to the pharmacist there at this new compounding pharmacy that I had switched her to that I had had no relationship with. It was actually of her picking because she had moved to this area. And the pharmacist scared the poo-poo out of her, telling her that the dose that I had her on was way higher than any other patient or client that they had at that pharmacy. And I was just stunned because it actually, you know, I've talked to a lot of practitioners. I worked with a lot of compounding pharmacies, and the doses I have are certainly not, you know, extraordinarily high. And she was really worried. And then the pharmacist said, well, I can connect you with our consulting such and such for this fee and whatnot. So I don't know if he was trying to upsell her or something.
It could have been that, but yeah.
But if he was truly thinking, you know, I do think a lot of times, you know, knowing these doses and knowing what's safe and what's not is a lot of doctors just put all hormones into the unsafe bucket and they're terrified of prescribing them.
What was the Premarin back in the day, you know, when we first started practice in Women's Health Initiative, you know, again, 20 plus years later, that study still comes up, even as bad as it was. What was Premarin? 0.625 milligrams?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that's like apples and oranges when it comes to these hormones. Yeah. It's completely different.
And the patch, right? You know, the estradiol patch, that's what? 0.025, 0.05, 0.075. Those doses seem extremely low. And I think they probably do it on purpose that way. All right. But they don't affect a woman's body as low as the dose seems. Even oral, what is oral? You get a half, 1 milligram, 2 milligrams of oral estradiol. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. And oral estradiol is so much more stronger than taking a biased cream with the estriol and the estradiol. So in fact, I had a patient, you know, I had her on some biased and I think her doctor, she had another doctor, a little doctor hopper, and her doctor put her on some estradiol. She didn't do great on it, came back to me. And then when we were talking about it, she wanted me to put her on 20 milligrams. Yeah, it was like 10 to 20. Yeah, it was 10 and then 20 milligrams of estradiol. And I said, that is impossible. That is such a high dose that you would have so much repercussions from that.
From static dosing, you would.
Well, oh, that's estradiol straight up as an oral.
Oh, as an oral.
As an oral.
Oh,
my
God.
She wanted to go back on an oral instead of the cream. And I said,
Are you sure it wasn't a mistake and it was 2 milligrams?
It was 2 milligrams.
It was probably 2.0 milligrams.
I know that her doctor did 2 milligrams, but she was getting the numbers and the decimal mixed up. And I said, you know, her name, that is not a dose. They don't even make that dose.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
Let's talk a little bit about dosing and what this
could you
do.
Imagine if someone wrote that into a pharmacy and they compounded 20 milligrams of oral estradiol. Oh, wow.
So with estradiol, I rarely do any kind of estrogen orally. But if, you know, back in my career, I did it a little bit because it was pretty popular, but I don't do it anymore just because of the effect on the liver and you don't really absorb it that well. And you get so much different side effects from the oral than you do from the transdermal cream, but I would never ever go above, you know, like 2 milligrams of estradiol.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I know that was the early days of hormone replacement, but you learn, this is medicine. This is science. You learn, you know, through anecdotal report, you learn through your patients, you learn through seminars and continuing education, and you realize that there's a better way to do something. So our practice has always evolved that way. And I think every doctor in general is always pushing their craft forward. That's why it's the practice of medicine. But even still, I guess the subspecialty of hormones, right? Because I really do think that hormone replacement is its own specialty in the 21st century. You cannot be a specialist of something else and then do hormones on the side, because that's why things like this come up, you know, 0.8 milligrams.
Yeah, but biased cream is, like you said, it's like moisturizer.
It's like there's nothing in it. It is literally just Versabase. It's basically Versabase with nothing else in it. You might as well just put lotion on your skin. No wonder why her anxiety hasn't gotten better. But also the hot flashes, the fact that they have returned, that is a clue that the dosing is still too low after 3 months. Because when you and I are not accepting any new patients right now, but when we used to see new patients, we would have them follow up, at least I did anyways, and I know you are fairly similar. We'd have them return usually within 2 to 3 months of their first appointment, because that is when you would notice, or they would notice, a little regression in their symptoms. Their sleep got better right away. Their hot flashes went away. 8 to 12 weeks later, And all of a sudden now those things start to come back a little bit, which is the perfect time to have another follow-up appointment. And then you tweak those doses and you get them closer to where they want to be. So those things again, kind of go, you know, you're able to mitigate those symptoms all over again.
Yeah. So I understand the concept, and I do this too, where you start low and then you work your way up, because it's better to work your way up than to start super high and take too much of a good thing and then you're trying to back out of it. So I can understand maybe starting low, but I do feel like, you know, for Janelle, especially since the anxiety is her main complaint, I mean, this is obviously affecting her life. The hot flashes, sure, she was probably happy about the hot flashes, but the anxiety is what she's really looking at. She had mentioned about, I really need estrogen to keep my serotonin levels up. And there is a research article I read not too long ago, because I've been looking at a little bit of how the neurohormones, the neurotransmitters are affected by estrogen. And actually dopamine has a big effect when estrogen goes down. So when dopamine goes down, when estrogen goes down in menopause, your dopamine receptors downregulate. So you actually get less dopamine. Same with the serotonin, I would imagine. I'm going to look that up because I know that it has an effect on the neurohormones. I'm just remembering this specific article about dopamine.
Well, I know that the estradiol or estrogen in general, as the estrogen drops, there's a connection to serotonin, both on the sleep side, right, which is why sleep gets disrupted, and the vasomotor center in the brain serotonin plays a really big role, which is why as their estrogen level drops, they start having hot flashes, because it throws off the vasomotor center. So I think it's playing a role on both sides of the coin. Estradiol levels, because that's the main, you know, amount of estrogen, and people don't even realize when you go into menopause, you go from producing lots of estrogen to nothing. Like literally nothing, you know. Let's say an average woman, what would you say on day 12 of a woman's cycle when she's menstruating, what would you say an average estradiol level on day 12 would be for, let's say, a group of women, 100 women, 1,000 women?
A cycling woman, day 12 is when that estradiol levels peak to cause an ovulation. So it's easily between, you know, 260 to 460. But I'm not sure if, so just kind of to backdrop to the listeners, they may not understand what that, you know, what those numbers mean. Maybe you want to explain that.
Well, I mean, you know, so you and I are testing numbers all the time. The women that are writing us these questions are also having their blood work done. Okay, when you're in menopause, it's going to say on the blood work, Lequest or Labcorp, it's going to say less than 30. Okay, something like that. If you're on hormones, certainly not a 0.8 milligram dose, it's going to say something a little bit more than that. It might say 45.
Honestly,
it'd
probably your blood work, if you did an estradiol taking a 0.8, 50 milligram bias,
you couldn't tell.
It'd probably still be less than 30.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably less than 15.
Yeah, you couldn't tell that she was taking anything.
Yeah, so if Janelle did a blood draw at this point after taking this protocol, her estradiol probably would be less than 30, less than 15, but her progesterone would probably be pretty high, which I'd like to go into not quite yet, but about her progesterone dose.
Right.
But I would like to circle back around to that serotonin and dopamine, because there are studies that are showing that women, when they go into menopause, especially women that already had issues with anxiety and especially depression, that it does get worse after menopause. I mean, they have,
oh, sure. Yeah.
And that I think is because of the neurohormones. So I do feel like Janelle is on the right path to working with her anxiety by working with her menopause and doing her hormone replacement. It's just trying to find that right combination.
Now, to your point, and I definitely agree with you. You know, I've looked at those studies just because, you know, we're learning more and more about the effects of perimenopause and menopause on a woman's body. It's not just hot flashes and night sweats. It's a lot of things that kind of rob women of their quality of life on a day-to-day basis. You know, they got things to do. They got, you know, a household to take care of. They got kids to take care of. They got a job to, you know, do. They got a, you know, they got lots of things to do. They can't afford to not be able to function properly, where I think they do sort of get blown off a little bit. Like they just like, you know, oh, well, you're not dying. You don't have, you know, a major disease. It's just menopause. You'll be fine. You know, I don't think that that's in the 21st century. I don't think that's good enough. Which is why we're doing the podcast, is, you know, to help kind of fill in those gaps. And when you see something like this, I don't know how many times we've done a question or received it, or someone reaching out, and you see these kind of strange, minuscule little doses. I mean, it doesn't, maybe a little frustrating, right? I feel bad for the women that are reaching out to us, because they're finding a practitioner. The practitioner just isn't prescribing them enough. Now, one thing I was going to talk about a story from a patient of mine, and it sort of blends in well to this. So she, I think I met her now 3 years ago, give or take, always have had debilitating depression, like major depressive disorder, to the point where she couldn't work at times. She was bedridden. I mean, just major depressive disorder. And because of something, I don't even know exactly I put her on rhythmic dosing. And since being on rhythmic dosing, now rhythmic dosing, you said, 20 milligrams of estradiol orally, we would never do something like that. On rhythmic dosing, the dosing actually is pretty high. We'll talk about the...
Maybe explain what rhythmic dosing is.
Okay.
That way, when they're following the story, they know what she's doing.
Yeah, right. So Janelle, what we're talking about here, she's doing what's called static dosing. She's doing the same dose every day. Okay, rhythmic dosing is this idea that you're using a dose of estradiol, and it's straight estradiol, not even bias, it's straight estradiol, but it is in accordance to what a normal woman's menstrual cycle would look like. So it basically recreates the menstrual cycle over the course of a 28-day cycle. And now we do that on purpose, which seems very strange to some people. Even doctors don't understand why we would do that. But it comes down to a dosing issue. If you do static dosing at a low dose and then gradually raise it at a certain point, that could potentially cause some bleeding issues. Static dosing, bleeding is not an option. On rhythmic dosing, we are encouraging the bleeding because we're controlling it and making it consistent over 28 days. In her case, she has not had one depressive episode in 3 years after being on the rhythmic dosing. Her mood is, she's under a tremendous amount of stress. She travels all the time. She works she's kind of like an executive for some company. Don't exactly know what she does, but she sells some types of things for handicapped people. Or sells something to businesses for handicapped people. She has just been rock solid since we started rhythmic dosing.
So doing the rhythmic dosing, which is basically recreating the 28-day cycle of estrogen and progesterone, mm-hmm. those doses change because in a actual nobody has a perfect 28-day cycle, but in a 28-day cycle, the estrogen is different on day 2, day 12, day 22, just like that progesterone. So you're recreating a 28-day cycle in a menopausal woman, so hence she's going to have a period, but her depressive episodes went away when you did that, yet she still had depressive episodes prior when she was cycling.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So what does that tell you?
Good question.
Perhaps good question. Sounds like maybe, because we see this too. I mean, we deal with a lot of perimenopausal and menopausal women, but also, I have dealt with a lot of women that are, cycling. Is probably her hormones might have been in balance, which I've seen before, and you have too, in her 20s and 30s.
Yeah, for years. I mean, ultimately, you're right. I think there is a connection there. Same thing with migraines. See, migraines get better with that, those types of things. That's why the dosing matters. You use the static dosing or rhythmic dosing dependent on what problem you're trying to help. If her anxiety got worse with menopause, and it certainly sounds like it did, that's why I'm bringing up the rhythmic dosing, because it could just be nothing more than a dosing issue, that her dose needs to skyrocket.
Or she might be a good candidate for that rhythmic dosing. Instead of raising up her biased 50-50, perhaps, Janelle might do really good doing that protocol of, taking that rhythmic protocol where you're taking the estradiol creams and you're changing it throughout a 28-day cycle. So you're mimicking a 28-day perfect cycle of hormones in the blood. And with that progesterone, because now it might be a good time to talk about with her progesterone dose at 175 milligram sustained release capsule, she's mentioning that she's feeling drugged.
Yeah, I mean... Would you start someone out the first time out of the gate at 175 milligrams?
Well, I'm glad that her practitioner is giving her progesterone. That's going to protect her uterus. But at the same time, progesterone is supposed to raise GABA. It does reduce down cortisol, so it is helpful anxiety. But 175 milligrams might be a little bit, especially that sustained release. If she's taking it at night, sustained release, by the time morning time comes, so let's say she takes it at 9 o'clock at night, 8 o'clock at night, by the time 7 or 8 in the morning rolls around, it might still be at a high enough level that she is feeling a little bit lethargic. So I would say maybe backing down on that progesterone, or at the same time, she might need, well, it sounds like she's been on that for 3 months, but then she said something about 2 days. So I'm not sure had only been 2 days and she felt drugged on that progesterone capsule, then I would say give it a little bit more time because her body needs to respond to it. But at this, you know, but at the same time, even with that progesterone, I can understand why her practitioner wanted to go higher on that progesterone, because progesterone helps anxiety.
Right.
But she's saying it's not. So obviously it definitely is about the estrogen, but at the same time, if she were to do that rhythmic dosing, like you're saying, she wouldn't have that issue of feeling drugged with the progesterone.
Yeah, because the one difference, this is where it gets really confusing, you know, even for practitioners, because they understand. I had another patient the other day, she's also on rhythmic dosing, and she went to see her doctor, urologist, who is just starting to do hormone replacement, and was horrified that she's in her mid-50s and still having a period. She didn't understand necessarily, as a practitioner, a urologist, didn't understand why we would have a woman that was 56 years old having a period.
Well, maybe explain why we would want to do that.
Well, as I said a minute ago, it comes down to dosing. On static dosing, you can raise the dose to a certain level, but bleeding is not an option in static dosing.
And why would bleeding happen because of static dosing?
Because you raise the dose too much. So if you're going from
point... I'm asking you questions. What I wanted to say is, for people listening, is if you're giving someone estradiol, an estrogen, that and they have a uterus, that's going to cause the uterine lining to thicken up.
Okay, yeah. Now, I was taking that part, I was taking that part for granted.
Now, progesterone, if you have a uterus and you're taking estrogen, progesterone is supposed to keep the uterine lining thin so that estrogen replacement you're taking doesn't cause the thickening and bleeding. And when you're doing a static dose and your lining's thickening up and you're having bleeding, that is a risk factor for uterine cancer.
Yeah.
So that is the... So I could see where the doctor would be a little horrified, absolutely, not understanding.
Right.
But in rhythmic dosing, the whole goal is to actually thicken up the endometrial lining of the uterus like it would be in a actual, you know, 28-year-old female cycle, you know, 28-year-old, you know, blood levels. So when they're cycling, that lining does thicken up, but you need to have that slough off. If you're going to do rhythmic dosing and you have a uterus, you should be having a period.
Yeah,
because then that reduces the risk of uterine cancer.
Right,
in fact, it almost eliminates it.
So in some ways, kind of a worst case scenario on static dosing is, let's say you have a certain dose on the estradiol, and this would be a case of having a transvaginal ultrasound on a, you know, regular basis. If your dose was high enough on the bias, let's say in this context, instead of 8.8 milligrams, let's say it was, you know, in the double digits, let's say it was 10 milligrams plus, okay? And you're not taking enough progesterone, maybe taking a progesterone cream, you're taking 25 milligrams, you're not taking enough, granted, you're probably taking some, okay? Because at least the practitioner is going to prescribe the progesterone of some variety. But let's say the dose was too low. Now that lining is growing. Now, most of the times you get to that threshold, that specific estrogen threshold for the woman, then eventually she's going to have some spotting or bleeding if the bias dose is high enough. Okay. So that's where you get a little clue. And that's why bleeding in some ways is kind of par for the course with hormone replacement, because it can be a good warning sign. Okay, this is your body's limit. You can't, you know, stay at that dose. We either have to raise the progesterone or reduce the bias dose. But that's where, let's say you get to that certain point where she's having bleeding problem, but she's still having a bunch of symptoms. Well, you can't raise the bias anymore. You can't keep raising the progesterone anymore, because it doesn't work if you just keep raising the dose. So then, based on the symptom picture, what they're trying to accomplish because of their menopausal symptoms, that sort of helps determine the switch over to rhythmic dosing, or maybe just starting with rhythmic dosing in the first place, based on, as you always say, based on the goals that they're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, so I would say with Janelle, perhaps the rhythmic dosing might be possible for her. I certainly don't do rhythmic dosing with everybody. I mean, I have a lot of people on static dosing, but I will say anxiety is one of the biggest symptoms of menopause. I hear it all the time.
Right.
But when you think about menopause, I think now, you know, it's 2024, people are realizing that anxiety is a huge part of menopause. But 10 years ago, you know, I'd ask somebody, are you having anxiety? And they'd be like, yes. And I'm like, that's a big symptom of menopause,
right?
Because everybody thinks it's hot flashes, night sweats, and a, you know, vaginal dryness. Anxiety should be up there and easily the top 5, if not the top 3 for menopause. So that's where I do feel like like, you know, because we love to do a lot of research. We love, you know, we've been working with patients for, you know, over 20 years, is the estrogen, I feel, has a huge impact on anxiety because of the neurohormone aspects to it, where, you know, even 15 years ago, we would say, oh, progesterone, 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 because progesterone lowers cortisol, or it raises up GABA, that helps with anxiety. But that's not the whole picture with menopause. Now, perimenopause, on the other hand, when you're having perimenopausal anxiety, which is also happening, that's coming from the progesterone. But when you hit menopause...
Or the lack of progesterone.
The lack of progesterone, because yeah. In perimenopause, you're right, progesterone drops first, the estrogen levels start to decline, or they might stay neutral there until you do actually hit menopause. So treating perimenopausal anxiety is a little bit of a different, you know, I guess you could say a different protocol than you would be with menopausal anxiety.
Sure. Yeah. It's coming. The anxiety is coming from a different place.
Still similar. I mean, they overlap. Yeah. They call it, shades of gray or whatever, but you do treat a perimenopausal woman a little bit differently than a menopausal woman when it comes to anxiety.
Yeah. And the big difference between a perimenopausal woman that's still, you know, she's still cycling every month, right? So her estrogen levels are still, you know, above the threshold of what it needs to be in order for her to have that menstrual cycle. In menopause, it's well below the threshold, which is why she didn't have a period anymore. If she was producing enough estrogen, then she would still be having a period. And let's be honest, testosterone makes men men and estrogen makes women women. So the more of it they have, the better they're going to feel in both situations. But like you said earlier, that there is a little bit of fear about giving women too much estrogen. Okay. Now that's why there's two different dosing types. My patients, as well as yours, 80% of them are on static dosing? 80%. Okay. A lot of women get to their 50s and they're sort of happy that they don't have a period anymore, right? They're glad they don't have to deal with the inconvenience. I mean, you're just turned 51. What do you think?
I like not having a period.
Yeah, sure. Right.
Because
yeah.
I'm actually just going through menopause.
Yeah.
So I haven't had a period. What is it? Right now it's the end of May. It's been like 2 months. So I was going through perimenopause, which we've talked about, and you know, we have the book that we wrote.
Oh boy, were you.
And then now, hey, I'm heading into that menopause. I'm considering going on the rhythmic dosing because I do feel in some respects that is, could be, you know, a little bit of the gold standard when you're looking at bone density, anti-aging, heart disease, that kind of thing. But right now I'm doing a little bit more static just because I'm a little bit more newly into menopause, because it's menopause isn't a line in the sand where you cross it and there you are. It's really more of like, it's a phase like puberty. You know, puberty can last for years. You know, your kids from when they're 12 to they're 17, puberty lasts for years, or even pre-puberty. So that's where right now I'm doing a little bit more static dosing, but I may matriculate into the rhythmic dosing, and I'll keep you updated because I don't mind talking about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you and I have had that conversation a couple of times we talked about it, honestly, probably a couple of weeks ago. You're not, just because your cycle is so recent, you're not really, you know, you're not a perfect candidate for it yet, because we could be adding in too much estrogen too quickly.
And I'm not really having any hot flashes.
No, surprisingly.
I'm not having some of those symptoms. So I'm just going to kind of work my way into it. We're doing blood work. And, you know, checking the FSH levels, checking the estradiol levels, and checking the progesterone levels. So really, like you said earlier at the beginning of this podcast, doing any kind of hormone replacement or treating women with menopause or perimenopause, you have to treat every single person differently. It's yeah. not like, hey, I have a sinus infection, give me a Z-Pak.
Yeah, no, you cannot. Yeah, I mean, that is the one thing about hormone replacement. It is, every single woman is different. Now, granted, there's a lot of themes that, you know, you end up having 100 women, 500 women, 1,000 women. There'll be some themes to the prescriptions. Let's say progesterone, oral progesterone. Okay. You know, a bunch of them are on 100 milligrams. Some of them are on 125. Some of them are on 150. A few of them are on 200. Okay. That's going to be the trend across the board. The majority of them are going to be on 100 milligrams of sustained release progesterone.
Yeah. That's like that's like vanilla. Like that's the most common thing. That's the most common dose. Never less than that, never more than that. But like you said, it depends on the person. Like, you know, especially Janelle with having her anxiety, I feel for her, because anxiety is one of the, you know, it's one of the worst feelings you can have.
Oh,
I'd
sure.
rather have, I don't know, I'd rather pull a hamstring or something. I don't know. It's just a terrible feeling. One thing looking at this that we didn't mention, which I know you're all into cortisol and the adrenals, is estrogen has a huge impact on buffering cortisol. So her anxiety might actually be coming from her cortisol levels.
Yeah, she doesn't go into anything, any life circumstance. So we don't really know what's going on. If her stress level is really high, usually anxiety and stress kind of go hand in hand, right? You know, higher your stress, your higher anxiety. But if her anxiety started at menopause, it gives us a clue as to what could be driving the anxiety, which is why I brought up the rhythmic dosing. Anxiety and depression sort of go hand in hand. That's why the patient of mine, even though hers wasn't anxiety, hers was a major, and literally she's had a psychiatrist for years and nothing really ever seemed to work all that well until she started the rhythmic dosing. I find that to be pretty profound because I wouldn't have necessarily expected that before we started it, you know, right? It was just something that she had mentioned. Like, my mood has never been better. And I'm like, wow, I was really... I'm always a little bit shocked and amazed, right? When we get feedback from patients, right? We have an agenda of what we think is going to happen. We have an idea of what we think is going to happen. And usually you and I are pretty good about being able to predict and how it's going to go because we've been doing this for a long time. But even still, people surprise me all the time on, you know, their feedback and how they, and every woman experiences the hormone replacement differently. I just had one, she was on rhythmic dosing. She didn't like it at all. She didn't do very well. And now we put her on a lower static dose. But now she's having an issue she went from a progesterone cream, which is what we do on the rhythmic dosing, to a progesterone capsule. And she's feeling that drugged feeling from the progesterone capsule. As I said a minute ago, static dosing, bleeding's not an option. So we're not going to drop it below the 100 milligrams. So what would you do there? Someone's on 100 milligrams of oral sustained release progesterone, and she's feeling drugged, the following day. What would you do with that?
I would switch it to an instant release progesterone.
Yeah, right. The reason why she's asking to go down below 100 milligrams, but that's kind of our rule. We don't really, going below 100 milligrams, technically, crossing your T's and dotting your I's is technically not safe for the patient, right?
If they're taking an estrogen cream.
Yeah. You can do that if they're not taking estrogen.
Oh yeah. Before, I went into menopause, I was taking progesterone at night. It's wonderful.
Yeah. Women of pretty much all menstruating age and postmenopausal, all women can take any dose of progesterone they want relatively. We usually go up to 200 milligrams. We don't usually ever, except in some rare instances, go above 200. When it comes to static dosing, we don't go below 100 either. Now, what would you do? So that same thing. That's what I end up doing. I end up giving her instant release. What would you do if it still doesn't improve the drugged feeling? Then what would you do next?
Oh, for your other patient or for Janelle?
Let's say Janelle is having the same issue. Let's say her doctor reduces her down to 100, the same thing still happens.
This is the thing with Janelle. Like, I love the bioidentical hormones. I love doing the dosing. I love talking with you about the dosing. But I think there's more to focus on with Janelle than just her dose of progesterone and her estrogen.
Yeah, sure.
She's having anxiety, and she's having it really bad, that I really think there's other extraneous things, like I was saying about her adrenal glands. I would consider looking at her cortisol levels. I would, because hormones do buffer cortisol. That's why before menopause, even perimenopause, women feel, they'll say, I never used to be such a worrier. I never used to be waiting for the other shoe to drop. I never used to be anticipating every single wrong thing that could happen.
Right.
Until I hit perimenopause and menopause. And that's because of those hormones dropping and not having to buffer some of those catecholamines, like even adrenaline and norepinephrine. I have women that will tell me when they go into menopause and perimenopause that I'm so hypervigilant. I don't know why I'm so hypervigilant about so many things. And that's where the worry wart comes from. I'm such a worry wart because that has to do with the hormones. So I would say maybe even focusing on kind of getting her out of that sympathetic nervous system, which is part of those adrenal glands, your fight or flight, because I know that Janelle is in that fight or flight, that sympathetic nervous system, probably 24/7.
Trying
to get her into more of a parasympathetic nervous system with her rest and relaxation, or what do they call it? Rest and digest. That's what we want to kind of pivot her to. So not just, you can do a lot with the hormones, but I think we probably want to work on lifestyle factors. And, I love supplementation.
Oh, well, there, I mean, there's, and that was my next thing I was going to say too, because you opened up that whole other part of the conversation that there is a tremendous amount that can be done on the supplementation side in addition to the hormones. So you mentioned some of the neurotransmitters, norepinephrine, epinephrine, you know, you have potentially you have some genetic mutations, MTHFR, COMT, now you can't break down COMT, you know, a little bit of a, you know, a genetic mutation, and now you don't break down those neurotransmitters very well, and they sort of stick around longer than they're supposed to, and that's just going to make someone feel anxious all the time. So consider things like methyl B12, methylfolate, certainly magnesium. There's a bunch of different forms of magnesium, magnesium L-threonate. You know, that can be very effective. Omega-3 fatty acids. I mean, right there, B vitamins for sure. Those are all really good ideas to help support the, how would you call it? Support the central nervous system, you know, the HPA axis, the brain adrenal connection, the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis, you're sort of supporting that. And now that anxiety starts to go down a little bit.
I've had amazing results with just really doing high doses of methylfolate, yeah, like up to 15 milligrams. So sometimes, so they normally come as micrograms. So, you know, common dose is maybe 1,000 micrograms of methylfolate, maybe even up to 5,000 micrograms of methylfolate. But I've seen some just great issues with anxiety going up to 10 or 15 milligrams, or that would be 15,000 micrograms of methylfolate, even on a completely side note, even on young people like teenagers, because the last thing you want to do is put a teenager on antidepressant medications, yeah, yeah, right, or anxiety medications.
Yeah, yeah. You're going to put them on Xanax when they're, oh, when they're 12,
yeah,
when they're 12.
Or Prozac, or, I mean, it's just,
I mean,
no.
I mean, even our patients, I mean, they're, like you said, the anxiety, the last thing they really want to do is take a, take an anti-anxiety medication. But sometimes, you know, they feel like they don't have any options. You know, that's more a point. There is lots of options. You don't have to go on. I mean, the rule, at least my rule, you don't, not that you and I can prescribe anti-anxiety medication because they're controlled substances, but if someone has anxiety, you don't give them anxiety medication because it's just going to habituate the use of the medication.
Such a slippery slope. It, I mean, I know that there are certain instances where, you know, antidepressants and anti-anxiety medications are necessary and they are helpful.
Of course,
there's always situations for that, but it's, That itself, it's like you said, is a specialty and it's a slippery slope.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
You know, we always believe in working on the very lowest intervention, you know, hey, lifestyle, food, water, and then you work your way up to medications and surgery if needed. You don't jump to the highest level of intervention. So I would say, like we're talking about with Janelle, that we're going to be working on, you know, her hormones, checking her hormone doses, changing her hormone doses, and then working on her adrenal glands and her lifestyle and supplementation.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this, like you said, anxiety should be in the top three, you know, hot flashes, night sweats, insomnia, and anxiety. Those should be like the top three, you know, in no particular order, because
she doesn't mention anything about insomnia, which I'm kind of surprised because that's pretty common here.
You would expect with that kind of anxiety that her sleep would just be a nightmare. And that would be kind of driving, you know, the less you sleep, the more anxiety you have. And the whole cycle kind of goes around and around and around. But you're right. I mean, the hormones are, you know, they're supposed to, especially if you're considering something like rhythmic dosing, which is really hard to find a practitioner that can do it. Okay. You know, we'll maybe, you know, pursue that a little bit more. We'll talk about some ways to find them later on. Because most practitioners are just not aware that it's even possible to do that, or if it's even a good idea to do that. Okay.
And you'd probably want to see somebody that has done it before.
Which is,
I mean, everybody starts somewhere. As a practitioner, I started super green and just not knowing a whole lot out of school, and you learn things, but
yeah, rhythmic dosing, you want to, you know, you want to know, you want to find someone that knows what they're doing with rhythmic dosing and understands philosophically on why you're doing it. And then the most important thing, and believe me, you and I have been doing this a long time, and we, you know, perimenopausal and menopausal women are challenging. Okay. They are challenging because they have all these things going on. Lives are, you know, some lives, their lives are perfect and great, but they're miserable. Some lives are chaotic and they're miserable. So, you know, it's just that's why it's its own specialty, because there's just so many issues that you're dealing with. And then as time goes forward, these issues can turn into more serious problems, you know, diabetes, heart disease, Alzheimer's, cancer, osteoporosis. I mean, you know, so there's a whole transition of symptoms, both in the short term and over the long term, that need to be evaluated and considered. That's why we do it, because I think it's important, because, you know, people deserve to feel the way they want to feel and be able to function at a high level. That's all our patients. They are busy. They have lots to do, and they need to be able to, they need to be able to feel as good as they possibly can.
Sorry, I was thinking about something kind of funny. Wouldn't it be great to have a bumper sticker on the back of the car that just is like, back off, I'm menopausal, or back off, I'm in menopause? Because I always say, you know, us menopausal women, we could conquer the world if we really all like pulled together.
I think you give a woman a purpose, a cause of some sort, and she's unstoppable.
All right, so let's do it, ladies.
You're right, Janelle. There is a lot going on this one that we don't know. Right, there's a little bit that we do know. The big thing is, at least to get started, it would be bumping up that bias dose. For anyone that's in a similar situation, which we see it all the time, when people do give us, I appreciate she gave us her milligram amount instead of just the ratio. The ratio really doesn't mean very much. It all comes down to the milligrams. 0.8 milligrams, that's less than 1 milligram per gram. That's the first place to start. And then all those other lifestyle things, and even the supplementation. And hopefully that would, provide Janelle with some benefit.
Absolutely.
If you like what you heard, if you have your own question, you can visit our website, progressionhealth.com, up at the top of the page. There is a tab there for Ask the Doctor. Go ahead, click on the tab, write your question. We are getting a nice long list of questions, right? So we have lots to talk about, but this is really good. It gives us a way to interact with everyone. We're hopefully providing value for people that are listening, because these answers are hard to find, clearly. These answers are very challenging, but we feel that it's very important, because we want women to be able to, we want them to be their own advocates. They can sort of, kind of push for themselves. And honestly, I think that's what's driving the whole, hormone replacement movement anyways. Women are not settling for mediocrity in how they feel on a daily basis, whether it's an anti-aging thing, or like you said, something debilitating, like really bad anxiety. All of those things you don't want to feel that way on a regular basis. So if you have a question, certainly reach out, and we will we'll read your question on the podcast. So any last things to add?
In fact, we are creating a community that we can, if you'd like to join, it's not yet, but it'll hopefully be before the end of this year. We're creating a community for women to come in and talk about, have kind of more of a private space, a safe space to talk about their hormones, their perimenopause, their menopause, their questions, what they're taking, what they should be taking. So we're developing that. So if you're interested, we're creating a wait list, because we're only going to have so many applicants allowed into our community. So you can just go to the website and sign up on the wait list. It's just your name and email.
Yeah, there should be a tab on multiple places on the homepage. It says join waitlist.
It's all over the our IT guy did put the join everywhere, like join now everywhere.
You can't miss it. Yeah, you can't miss it. But it it gives us a gives us an idea of who's interested, and that way we can also communicate with you via email as to the details on the progress we're making, and as we get closer to the actual launch date. Right now, it's kind of to be determined, but sometime towards the latter part of the year. But we're really excited about it, because I think we can take what we're doing with the podcast and just sort of expand upon that. And then people can feel comfortable, because now they're being guided by, some practitioners that actually have some knowledge in this space, because it's really challenging to get, and we know that it's challenging to get answers from people, because a lot of people reach out to us. So until next time, I'm Dr. Mackey.
I'm Dr. Davidson.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Progress Your Health podcast. If you like what you've heard on this podcast, please give us a positive review on iTunes. This allows us to spread our message, grow our audience, and help more people around the world. For more information, visit our website at progressyourhealth.com.